So we're here on Daf Yutes Amud Beis, and we're talking about the marriage of David HaMelech to the daughters of Shaul. Shaul had two daughters, if you recall from yesterday, Merav and Michal. And the Gemara says the following, that the marriage to Merav was not valid. The Gemara uses the term Kiddushei Tos. And the reason for that is because David was Mekadesh. He married Merav with a milva, with a loan. So he waived his rights to collect that loan. That loan had to do with the reward that Shaul HaMelech had promised him for killing Goliath. And Mekadesh B'milva Eina Mekudesh, so that Kiddushin is invalid. Shaul then marries off his daughter Merav to Adriel. And that's what happens as far as Michal is concerned. Merav is concerned. Then we get to Michal. There, Shaul HaMelech had made a deal with David that he would give David his second daughter's hand in marriage, that's Michal, if David would bring to Shaul Mea Orlos of Plishtim, which David did, and therefore he demanded that Shaul live up to his promise and marry off Michal to David. Shaul did not recognize that marriage either, because he held that was a case of milva upruta. Why milva upruta? Because David HaMelech did not yet cash in on the commitment of Shaul from the first round, meaning from the killing of Goliath, to give him Osher Gadol. So that's a milva. And now he gives him a pruta by bringing him the Mea Orlos. Shaul did not recognize that marriage of David to Michal. And the reason is, according to the first interpretation of the Gemara, that's called milva upruta. Basically, David was giving Shaul for the hand of Michal, he was giving both a milva, which means the original chov of the Osher Gadol, plus a pruta, which is the Mea Orlos. And according to the opinion of Shaul, milva upruta daita milva, that the das, the intention of a person, is for the milva. The milva is a very significant sum of money, and that's what he intends to give as marriage. The pruta is, so to speak, secondary. So the real das of the kiddush is on the milva, and once again it becomes mekadesh b'milva eina mekudeshes. David, on the other hand, thought that the marriage was absolutely valid because milva pruta daita pruta. The second interpretation of the Gemara is that everybody agrees, both Shaul and David, that milvu pruta daita pruta, and the issue here in the marriage of Michal is whether the arlos of Plishtim have the value of a shava pruta. Now all this is under the assumption that David didn't marry two sisters, which you're not allowed to do, because one of the two marriages was not valid, which means the following: that although David would agree, he would consent that the marriage to Merav was not valid, that was Kedushei Milva, but nevertheless David thought that the halacha would recognize his marriage to Michal, to the sect. So he was never married to two sisters. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha here on Daf Yutes Amud Beis. However, when the issue of how David was married to two sisters was brought in front of Rabbi Yossi, you may remember that Rabbi Yossi insisted that David married Michal after the death of Merav. So he was never married to two sisters when they were both alive. And if your wife dies and she leaves a sister, you're allowed to marry that sister of your wife after the death of your wife. And that's exactly what David did. He only married Michal after the death of Merav. That's according to Rabbi Yossi. All right, that's a quick, very blitzkrieg review of what we did yesterday. Now we're up to today. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi, let's see if we could all find the place You know that the page in the standard Talmud Bavli, it's not going to help us for this, is broken up into three sections. So we're talking about the middle section, which is a little bit wider than the top section, but not as wide as the bottom section. So if you have the middle section, and your eye will go up and down the right column, meaning the first word in each line, then what you're going to try to find here is a line that begins with the word lekalbe. So that's about, so let's say, 10 lines down in the middle section. Yep. And your eye will then move to the left and you'll see V'Rab Yossi. Yep. So I don't know how many people can find that. Okay, V'Rab Yossi, the Gemara says, we have a problem now, because according to Rab Yossi, we see that David was in fact married to both Merav and Michal, although David only married Michal after the death of Merav, but both marriages were valid. So now we have the following question to ask. Hi, what do we do with the following pasuk? You may recall that Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, had a pasuk from which he derived the conclusion that David was only married to Michal, but not to Merav. And that was from the extra words in the pasuk. The verse says, T'nola es ishti, that after David Amel fulfills the requirement, he brings back the Mea Orlos of Plishtim, then he says to his future father-in-law, that Shaul Amel, he says, T'nola es ishti, and then it says, Es Michal. So the pasuk, the verse is unjustifiably verbose. It could have just said Tna es Michal. Why does it say es ishti es Michal? And Rabbi Yeshua ben Karach understood that there's a mute here, and that mute is coming to tell you that only Michal is my wife, but I have no claim to Merav because that marriage was kedusha milveh ena mekudeshes. But now, according to Rabbi Yossi, both marriages, that of David to Merav and that of David to Michal, are both valid. So what is he, Rabbi Yossi, going to do? How's he going to interpret T'noles Ishti Es Michal? My Darish Bey. The Gemara says he's got to derive something from the extra superfluous words in this pasuk, because again, the pasuk should have said T'nola Tna es Michal. And Rabbi Yossi says, Litame, that this pasuk is coming to teach us a very important principle, which we're going to derive from other psukim. So now we're going to about to embark upon a brisa of Rabbi Yossi. Now, when we say a brisa of Rabbi Yossi, it might mean that this brisa was presented to the Gemara by Rabbi Yossi, and you may recall that we had a problem because the Torah, when it describes the five grandchildren of Shaul HaMelech, it describes them as being the children of Michal and Adriel. Now, keep in mind that once we determined, as we did before, that the marriage to Merav was invalid, then Shaul at that point gives over Merav to Adriel. When Shaul thinks that the marriage of David to Michal is invalid, he gives over Michal to Palti ben Laish. The oddity here is that the pasuk describes the grandchildren of Shaul as having been the children of a marriage between Adriel and Michal. Now, Michal was never married to Adriel. Michal was given over to Palti ben Laish. Who was given over to Adriel? Merav. Everybody with me?
Yeah.
So let's see it inside. This sanya we learned in a brisa, Rabbi Yossi hayadoresh mikros me'oravim. We have a few cases in Tanakh, thank God they're somewhat rare, where the Tanakh describes something that's that cannot be. It's mu'uravim. It's mu'urbavim. They're mixed up. Why? Because ksiv. It says in the pasuk, Vayikach ha'melech ha'shnei b'nei ritzpa bas ayo asher yoldo l'shol es harmoni ve'es mefiboshes. That's not relevant to our discussion. But in the end of this pasuk, it says, Ves chameshes b'nei Michal, again, Michal is the daughter of Shaul, asher yolda le Adriel. That makes no sense. Adriel amechos losi. Adriel was the husband of Michal. I'm sorry. Let me go over that one more time. Adriel was the husband of Merav. And here the Torah is talking about the children that came from a marriage between Michal and Adriel. Michal was married to Palti Ben Laish. So that's exactly Rabbi Yossi's question. V'chili Adriel Nitna? This pasuk is Me'urbav. It can't be that Michal had five children from her marriage to Adriel, because halo lepalti men laish nitna deksiv v'shol nasanis Michal bito eishes David lefalti ben laish. In other words, Michal was given by Shaul to Palti. Michal was never married to Adriel. On the contrary, it was Merav that was given for marriage to Adriel. So how could these five children be identified as the children of a marriage between Michal and Adriel? It was Merav who was married to Adriel, and Michal was married to Palti.
Unless they were married.
But again, there was never a marriage between Michal and Adriel. The Tanakh testifies that there was a marriage between Merav and Adriel. So how could these five children be born to Michal in a marriage with Adriel? That's not so. Now, from this question, Rav Yossi is going to derive a principle, and we'll see many, 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 many areas in Torah that can be explained with that principle and only with that principle. And it works like this. Ella, when the Torah mentions Michal as the wife of Adriel, instead of mentioning Merav as the wife of Adriel, Makish Kidushe Merav L'Adriel L'Kidushe Michal L'Falti. In other words, the Torah is telling us that in the eyes of Shaul HaMelech, there's no difference between the marriage of Merav to so-and-so, we'll call him Adriel, or the marriage of Michal to so-and-so Palti, because in both cases, although David HaMelech was Makadesh, let's go through that, Merav and Michal, but nevertheless, in the eyes of Shaul, those marriages that were implemented by David, whether it's with Merav or Michal, were invalid. And therefore, although in the mind of Shaul HaMelech, he had every right to marry off Merav to Adriel and Michal to Palti, because the marriage of David in both these cases was invalid, but that's not really true. Because again, we're going to Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi holds that David HaMelech was married to both Merav and Michal, which means that according to Rabbi Yossi, both the marriage of David to Michal, to Merav, excuse me, and the marriage of David to Michal were both valid marriages, which means that when Shaul HaMelech, according to Rabbi Yossi, gave Merav's hand to marriage to Adriel, that was be'avera. And in the case of Michal, we know that marriage to Palti was be'avera. And if you recall, we gave two different explanations as to why David HaMelech's marriage to Michal was valid. So the pasuk now is teaching me the following: Makidushi Michal lefalti ba'avera. And the pasuk says es ishti es Michal, which means that David HaMelech testifies that Michal is his wife. You remember he brings back the Mea Arlos of Plishtim, and he says, "Give me my wife Michal." And that pasuk indicates clearly that he was married to Michal. Therefore, the marriage between Michal and Palti ben Laish was absolutely meaningless. It was Bavera. We'll soon see later on that Palti was such a tzaddik that he never actually materialized that intimacy with Michal, because he realized that she was married to David. But the Gemara nevertheless says that the marriage per se between Michal and Palti, whether they consummated the marriage or not, leave that on the back burners, but it was definitely Bavera. And that's why David HaMelech says, "Es ishti es Michal, give me my wife Michal." So it means that the Kiddushin of David to Michal were valid Kiddushin. And the reason for that is that David was Mekadish Michal with a milv and a pruta. And we paskin that milv pruta daital pruta. So therefore the Mea Orlos was Shava pruta, and that was valid for Kiddushin. And therefore the marriage between David and Michal was a valid marriage, and therefore the marriage between Michal and Palti was a bluff. It was a non-existent marriage. Is af kiddushe meirav la Adriel ba'avera. So too, the kiddushin between Meirav and Adriel was ba'avera. In other words, the kiddushin of David Amel to Meirav, based on this hekesh, was also a valid kiddushin. And here we're going to have a long discussion as to how that marriage to Meirav was valid. After all, Mekadesh b'milva eina mekudeshes. But let's leave that question for a moment on the back burners. So it says, af kiddushe Meirav l'Adriel ba'avera. So it means that the kiddushin of David to Meirav were kiddushin gemurin, they were valid kiddushin. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi says that David HaMelech was married to two wives, but and even though those wives were sisters, he was allowed to be married because he married Michal only after the death of Michal. The death of Merav. Correct. Okay. Now, let's just summarize. Everything that we've done so far today in the new sugya is according to Rabbi Yossi. And the sum total of Rabbi Yossi is the following, that David HaMelech was married in a valid marriage both to Meirav and to Michal. Therefore, the marriage of Meirav at the hands of Shaul to Adriel was invalid. The marriage of Michal to Palti ben Laish at the hands of Shaul was also invalid. And how do we derive the conclusion that the marriage to Meirav Tadriel was invalid because the marriage was valid between David and Meirav? That's because the hekesh between Meirav and between Michal and Adriel. Right? The Tanakh mentions a marriage relationship between Michal and Adriel. We know that that's not so. There was never a marriage relationship between Michal and Adriel. So how did the Tanakh mention such a thing? And the answer is that the Torah wants to say that even though the name Meirav is omitted here in the relationship between the wife of Adriel and Adriel, Meirav's name is completely omitted. Instead, the Tanakh plugs in the name Michal in order to tell you that just like the relationship between Michal and her husband was invalid because David was Mekadesh Michal, so too the relationship between Meirav and her husband, namely Adriel, was totally invalid. But then we have the following question here. According to Rabbi Yossi, how could it be that David HaMelech was married to Meirav with a valid Kiddushin when we have a principle called Kiddushe Makadish B'milve Eina Mekudeshes? So he writes here in the name of one of the Achronim, the Regal Yeshar, and he says the Marshad agrees with this, is Tzorach Lomar Mikoach HaHekesh. Once Rabbi Yossi derives this Hekesh that both marriages of Meirav to Adriel and Michal to Palti were invalid, we must assume that David HaMelech chazar v'kitcha b'kiddushin gemurin. Now, did Shaul HaMelech know this or not? I don't know. But what he's saying is that in addition to the Mechilas Hamilva, which means that, again, let's go over it one more time. Shaul owed an Osher Gadol to David for having killed Goliath. But in addition to that, David Amel pulls out a couple of shekels from his pocket and he gives it to Merav, so that Merav was not married by virtue of the milva, the abstract chov that Shaul owed David, and David was willing to waive that chov, but rather with additional money. Now apparently, again, I'm not sure, it could be that Shaul HaMelech was unaware of the fact that David went ahead and subsequently gave money to Merav. This is very problematic in my mind, because keep in mind that Merav is a young child at this point, and the Kiddushin is to Shaul HaMelech. But the Marshal offers another possibility. And I'm just going to mention it, because as I said yesterday, we'd have to learn Masech the Kiddushin for this. The Marshal says that although Mekadesh b'milva ain't a Mekudeshes, Mekadesh b'hanos mechilas milva Mekudeshes. If he says that I'm going to be Mekadesh you with the loan that you owe me, that's not Kiddush, that's not valid. But if he says I'm Mekadesh you with the benefit and the monetary pleasure you get from the fact that I'm wiping off this chov, I'm being mochel lechov, then he's giving her a hana. And if you've learned Masech the Kiddushin, you may know that hana is called a shava pruta. Like, for example, if he says to her, I'm being mekadesh you with a commitment that I will speak to the mayor on your behalf because you might be in trouble with the law, or if he says to her, I'm marrying you with the hana that I will dance in front of you. You want to see me dance because I'm a great tap dancer. So mekudeshes. Hana is considered shava kesef. So you don't have to give a woman kesef. In fact, we don't give a woman kesef for marriage. Our minhag is to give a tabas, which is shava kesef. The Gemara says that hana is also considered shava kesef in certain cases. If you would pay for that hana, a pruta, then that hana is worth a pruta. And now he says to her, I'm being mekadesh you not with the milva. That he can't do, because the milva is not giving us something. But if he says, I want to be mekadesh to you with the hana of mechilas milva, how much would you pay me, or pay someone to convince me to be mochel the milva? That's considered shava kesef.
But she's still underage, so it shouldn't matter. You really have to go out to Shaul.
So again, he's being mekadesh meirav by saying to Shaul, I'm being mekadesh meirav with the hanas mechilas milva.
Okay.
But the bottom line is that both the marriage to Michal, again, David's marriage to Merav and his marriage to Michal, both of them were valid marriages. Hence, there was no possibility of Merav being married to Adriel or Michal being married to Palti Men Laish. Now, all this is according to Rabbi Yossi. And as we said yesterday, and we repeated ourselves this morning, Rabbi Yossi is arguing against Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha took that pasuk and the extra words Tnois Ishti Es Michal to indicate that David was only married to Michal. He never was married to Merav. And that is because, according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha at least, David HaMelech never gave anything additional to Merav besides the milva. And Kiddushei Milva is not valid. So the Gemara asks, what is Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha going to do with this very odd pasuk me'urbav? Nami haksiv, what is he going to do? It says, Chameshas b'nei Michal bashol, asher yoldo le'adriel. How is it possible that these children are considered the children of Michal, who's married to Adriel? She couldn't have been married to Adriel. That's impossible, because she was married to Palti Ben Laish. Even that marriage wasn't valid because David successfully married Michal. But in any event, since we don't have the Hekesh of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha never accepted that Hekesh, and he assumed that the marriage between Merav and Adriel was a valid marriage, the children are not the children of Michal, but rather these are the children of Merav. Why does the Tanakh say that these were the children of Michal, when in fact they were the children of of Merav, because again, the father of these five children is clearly Adriel, correct? But who is Adriel married to? He was married to Merav, and in fact, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Karach, at least that marriage was absolutely valid. So now we don't understand if Adriel is the father of these children, then the mother of these children is none other than Merav. How can the Torah identify the mother of these children as Michal? Michal was married to Palti ben Laya. She was never married to Adriel. So we had the answer of Rabbi Yossi, but that's because Rabbi Yossi accepted the Hekesh, which taught Rabbi Yossi that David HaMelech was married to two different valid marriages, both to Merav and Michal. But Rabbi Yeshua ben Karach doesn't accept that Hekesh. So what is he going to do with this pasuk that identifies the parents of these Chameshas Banim as Michal and Adriel? That's impossible. So before, I told you that from this pasuk we could derive a principle that could be applied demystify many mystical psukim that seem to be contradictory, and that's what we're ready for now. Amar lecha Rabbi Yeshua, v'chi Michal yolda, who is really in fact the mother of these five children, v'alo Merav yolda. It was Merav who was married to Adriel, and these were the five children of Merav. Why are they called the children of Michal? And the answer is that Merav died tragically very shortly after she gave birth to five children. Maybe she had two sets of twins, and then she had a preemie. We discussed this yesterday, but in any event, Merav dies at a young age. And now, Nebuch, there are five that we call in Yiddish pitzalach, these little children that have to be raised, and they need a mother. So who's going to be stepping into the shoes of Merav and replacing her as a mother? So that's the Gemara's language here. Merav Yolda, she was the biological mother of these five children, but Michal Gidla, Michal, filling in for her deceased sister, raised these five children. Okay, so she raised these five children, but why does the Pasuk say that these were the children of Michal? Whenever the Torah gives you a lineage, it's always based on the biological motherhood, but not on the basis of who raised the child. So you have many situations in which there's a biological mother, but the children were adopted by another mother. But the Torah is never going to say that the children are the children of the adoptive mother. It's always the children of the biological mother. So here Rabbi Yeshua derives a bombastic principle. Lefichach nikru al shma. Why are these children considered the children of Michal? Michal raised these children. Lalamdecha, that this teaches us. Kol amagadel yosam betov beso. Malalov akosuv ki'ilu yelado. If you raise a child who doesn't have parents, then it's considered as if you're the parent. So that these five children were orphans from their mother. They had lost their mother, Merav. And now, Michal is going to take these orphans, that are orphans from their mother, and she is going to raise them. Once she raises them, it's as if, ki'ilu yelado, it's as if these were her children. Now, I want to make a few comments here. First of all, how far can you go with this Gemara? Can you take this Gemara literally? What do I mean? We, as you know, have a great mitzvah of Piria Verivia. Now, Piria Verivia, having children, is a very tricky kind of mitzvah. It's almost unique in what aspect? You know, when the Torah tells me to take a lulav, I take a lulav. If I don't have a lulav, I go out and buy a lulav, correct? And that's true for all the mitzvahs. Now, it could be I don't know how to do nanuim in lulav, so I go to a baki, and he explains to me how to do nanuim. I don't know how to fulfill a mitzvah, but I'll get someone who's an expert, who's more learned than I am, and he'll teach me how to fulfill the mitzvah. So every mitzvah has within it the potential to, again, you may have to go very far, you may have to cross the seven seas, but you'll ultimately be able to fulfill the mitzvah. There's one exception to that rule, maybe two, but I know of one. which mitzvah is not biyadcha, you cannot have control of that mitzvah. No matter, try and try again, you might not succeed. What's that? Piri v'rivya. Now, if we have the case of a childless couple, they tried everything, they went to every fertility expert. Okay, today it's so much more sophisticated, Baruch Hashem. This is mamish what my Rebbe would call the kivshuha. I don't know if you ever heard of halachic man. I think we have it here somewhere in the library, in which he builds a whole philosophy on one word in the Torah, kivshuha, which means that we have to try to overcome all the challenges of the physical universe. And one of those great challenges is fertility. And Baruch Hashem, we've made a great deal of progress. But, you know, we're not there yet. We're close, I guess, because of all the different advancements in technology. But be that as it may, you have a childless couple. So there's a tshuva from Reb Shlomo Kluger. Reb Shlomo Kluger lived approximately 120 years ago. And he says that a childless couple should adopt a child. And once they adopt the child, if the child is young, and they, as the adoptive parents, raise the child, it's ke'ilu yoldo. And Rav Shlomo Kluger writes that that's a fulfillment, or shall we say, a partial fulfillment of the mitzvah of pru revu, which is an amazing kind of chiddush. Now, I myself, in our greater family, one of my close relatives adopted, they couldn't have children, they adopted actually two children, one after the other. And they've raised their children as if they were their own. And now we say, it's as if he gave birth, he fathered that child. So that's one thing I wanted to call to your attention. Another thing I want to call to your attention is the Ibn Ezra at the beginning of Parshas Toldos. Everybody asks the kasha. It says, Eli Toldos Yitzhak ben Avram. And then it says, Avram Holidus Yitzchak. So what is this Avram Holidus Yitzchak? The first part of the pasuk says, Eli told us Yitzchak ben Avram. So we've already stated that Yitzchak is the son of Avram. What does it mean, Avram Holidus Yitzchak? And the Ibn Ezra adds one word here. He says, Holidus Yitzchak. He says, Gidlos Yitzchak. In other words, Avram Avinu raised Yitzchak. What does it mean to raise someone? It means to give him an approach, a Weltanschauung, to teach him and guide him and inspire him how he should live his life. So there are two aspects to fatherhood, and the same applies to motherhood. One is biological, that's pretty much, at least in the case of a father, a cinch. He doesn't have to do much to be the biological father, but that's not the ultimate challenge of fatherhood. That's why the Torah says, we say it in Kriyat Shema every day, it says, and Chazal say that b'neichem elu talmidechem. So the word banim in the Torah is what?
Chazal say teach somebody's child Torah is like they're your children.
Correct, it's like your child. Correct, it says hanefesh asher asu b'charon. Where are all these nefesh asher asu b'charon? And the answer is that Avram and Sarah taught them Torah. So it means that there's another type of parenthood. This is not the biological parenthood, but rather it's the spiritual, psychological parenthood in which you give your child the training and the moral direction, and you basically mold the child, and that could be even ben chavero in the case of a Rebbe Talmud relationship, and it's as if you're the parent. To such an extent that the Mishnah in Bava Metzia, very wild, says that if you find two lost objects, one was lost by your father and the other was lost by your Rebbe, then you give preference to your Rebbe. Now, what could be greater than kibud av? But the answer is there's another kind of avus, there's another kind of fatherhood. And that's what my Rebbe used to always say about his father, that his father was not only his biological father, but he was his Rebbe. And that's a rare kind of situation in our contemporary life. I mean, we have so many yeshivas, Baruch Hashem, that it's a cinch. You know, you have a child and you send them to yeshiva. You don't have to fulfill the mitzvah of limadat avosim espinechem. You'll have other agents doing it on your behalf. But in truth, that's your mitzvah as a father, and that's what the pasuk adds. Avram holidus Yitzchak. He wasn't only the biological father of Yitzchak; he was the spiritual father of Yitzchak. And here also, in the case of Michal, having raised these five children as if they were her own, in playing that role of not biological motherhood, because it was Meirav who was the biological mother, then she, Michal, is now the spiritual mother of these five children, and that's what the Tanakh wants to go out of its way to teach us, that these children are called the children of Michal, because she was the one who raised these children. And according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Karach, we now have a solution to this very mysterious pasuk, which we call Me'urbav, which is completely mishkababbled here, that the marriage between Adriel and Michal was ultimately responsible for these five children, and why mention Michal when the biological mother was in fact Merav. And now the Gemara wants to show us to what extent this principle can explain many mysterious psukim. So Rav Chanina Omer, I derive this principle from another mysterious pasuk. Mehocha.
Can you help us find this?
Sorry?
Find where we are here.
Yeah, let's see, where are we? Rabbi Chanina Omer.
Okay, after the parentheses.
Yeah, you found it?
Yeah.
Okay, Mehocha, from here, I have a different source. This is a parasha in Rus, the fourth chapter of Megillas Rus. And if you remember, Naomi was the mother-in-law of Rus, and she did not give birth to the children of Rus, and yet, very strange, look at the pasuk. It says, "Vatikra ena lo ashkenos shem lemar yulad ben l'Naomi." This is a young man whose name was Oved, and he would be the grandfather of David HaMelech, or great-grandfather, I forget. Anyway, so What is this pasuk telling me? That amongst her neighbors, she declared, "I have a child. His name is Oved, and this Oved is called Ben Nami." What do you mean, Ben Nami? V'chi Nami Yolda, v'alo Rus Yolda. Who is the mother of Oved? It was Rus. Ella Rus Yolada, v'Nami Gidla. Now again, I don't think the Gemara is trying to in any way undermine Rus as a mother, but the Gemara is trying to tell us that Nami played a major role, perhaps even the primary role. You know, she was the link to the older generation, and lefichach nikra al shma, and therefore the child is considered the child of his grandmother, namely of Naomi, because Naomi gidla, she was the spiritual mother who raised Oved. And by the way, I was always confused about the following. I don't commemorate my grandparents' yahrzeits. I know a lot of people who do. Truth is, I never knew my grandparents. So you can explain it on a psychological level that I don't feel close to them. But it may even go deeper, more profound than that. Those who commemorate the yahrzeits of their grandparents may have had a very special relationship with their grandparents, in which case, just like in the case of Oved and his relationship with his grandmother Nami, and Nami raised this little Oved as if it were her child. So the grandmother-grandson relationship is a very intimate, close relationship, very powerful in a spiritual level, and it's as if Naomi was Oved's mother. So you're not commemorating your grandmother's yahrzeit when she passes on. You're really, in effect, commemorating your mother's yahrzeit. Now, again, I'm not trying to give you any directions here. You'll do what you want as far as commemorating your grandparents' yahrzeit. But I do have a sense from this Gemara that there may be room to advocate in favor of lighting a candle on the yahrzeit of your grandfather, grandmother, if you had a close relationship. I know people who are totally devastated by the loss of a grandparent. I didn't have that luck to experience that. I'm a Ben Skudim. I mean, my father was already 40 when I was born, so I didn't get to know my grandparents. In fact, only one of my four grandparents was alive at the time when I was alive, but she died when I was a youngster, so I hardly knew her either. But there are people who are zochet to have a close relationship with their grandparents, and the loss of the grandparent is devastating. And I think that reflects this principle here of Nami being the mother, so to speak, of Oved. So that's Rabbi Chanina. So we now have Rabbi Yeshua ben Karach derives this principle from Michal. We now have Rabbi Chanina derives this principle from Naomi. Now we have Rabbi Yochan. Rabbi Yochan Omer Mehocha. Another strange pasuk. Now, in order to appreciate this pasuk, which is at the very end of Tanakh, we have to know that Kalev ben Yefuna actually married Bisya bas Paro. I don't know if you knew that. I mean, I didn't know that, so you probably did, but I never knew that. So it's interesting how Bisya bas Paro was not only great in her own right in terms of what she did to defy and rebel against her father Paro and save the Moshiach Shal Yisrael, but not only that, she had another additional yichus. After her gerus, she eventually marries Kalev ben Yefuna. I mean, he was pretty chashuv. And there's a certain similarity between Kalev and Basya, or Bisya. Both of them were rebellious souls, in the positive sense, not in the pejorative sense. And the Pasuk in Divrei Hayomim says, V'ishto, and his wife, and then the Pasuk says, Yehudia, you may have that in brackets, I don't know if you have that, Yolda es Yered Avigdar, etc., etc., Ves Chaver Avi Socho, Ves Yikusil Avi Zanoach. And there's a whole list of children with names in them. Now, a lot of these names are names for Moshe Rabbeinu. For example, Yered is a name for Moshe Rabbeinu. Avigdor. And then the Pasuk ends by saying, Ela b'nei Bisya bas Paro. And this is like very strange. Umered. So now, Bisya bas Paro is married off to a person by the name of Yered. Mered. And Mered is Kalev. So Bisya bas Paro is married to Mered. Again, the Pasuk, I think as it's quoted again in my Gemara, maybe your Gemara is better as one up it on mine, the printed Gemara leaves out one important word, and it says, it should say, the Eile b'nei Bisya bas Paro asher lokach lo Mered. Or Mored. So Mored marries Bisya bas Paro. Who is Mored? Mored ze Kalev. So Kalev marries Bisya bas Paro after her gerus. V'lama nikrashmo Mered. Why is Kalev in this context called Mered? Shemorad biatzas meraglin. He is the rebellious scout, you know, who doesn't accept the influence of the other meraglim, and therefore he's given the name Mered, and he marries Bisya bas Paro. Now, in this list of B'nai Bisya, we have various kinuyim, which are nicknames for Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, so let me just read the note over here, if I could find it, of course. Oh, so for example, it says here, Kol Elesh Mosav Shel Moshehein, Kira Amrinam B'Megillah Daf Yud Gimel. So again, let's not confuse that. I made a confusion of Mered with Yered. Yered is Moshe. Shmo Yered sheyardu lehem Yisrael man biyomav. So Moshe Rabbeinu was responsible for the coming down, the going down of the man min hashamayim. So that's why he's called Yered. And Avigdor comes from the word Gidar. Shegadar pirtzoseim shel Yisrael. That was whatever there was a pirtz in klal Yisrael. And the people of Israel sinned, Moshe was always there to fill in that pirtza. And Chaver Shechibres Yisrael Aviyat Sheva Shemaim Socho Shenase Lehem Yisrael Kis Socho, which means a seer. Yikusil is called Shekavu, Miloshin Kavu Yisrael Lekel Biyomah, that they had faith and an attachment to God during the days of Moshe. And Zanuach, again, another name on this list is Niach Avanosem Shal Yisrael. Avi, there's a triple actually Avi here in this pasuk. Av b'Torah, Av b'Chochma, Av b'Nevius. In a word, all these names are referring to one person who is the Bas Paro. I mean, who are the children of Bisya Bas Paro. So Rabbi Yochanan asks the obvious question, V'chi Bisya Yolda, meaning as Moshe, she was not the mother of Moshe. Elo Yocheved Yolada. We know that Yocheved was the mother of Moshe. Elo Yocheved Yolada Ubisya Gidla. Because during that entire period of time, the baby was taken into the palace of Mitzrayim of Paro. And who was raising the child? who had all the impact on the child and his moral development. It was Bisya. His Lefichach Nikra, Moshe's called Al Shma, Moshe's called the child of Bisya, as if he was really the son of Bisya, which biologically he certainly wasn't. But it's the same idea as we saw in Rabbi Yishuv Ben Karcha, in the case of Michal, as we saw in Rabbi Chanina, in the case of Naomi. Now in Rabbi Yochanan, we see it in the case of Bisya Bas Para. Rabbi Lozami Mirhacha, I have a different pasuk in Tehillim. And the pasuk says, Ga'alti Bizroa Amecha B'nei Yaakov V'Yosef Sela. And this pasuk is referring to God's redemption of the Jews who came out of the Exodus from Egypt. And these are the Bnei Ashvatim. Now, the pasuk says, Bnei Yaakov, that these are the Shvatim, or the children of Yaakov. That's fine. God spares and redeems the children of Yaakov. But then it says, V'Yosef. Well, these are the Shvatim are not the children of Yosef, they're the children of Yaakov. So Rabbi Elazar raises the following objection. V'chi Yosef Yolad, was Yosef the father of the Shvatim, alo Yaakov Yolad? Ela Yaakov Yolad v'Yosef Kilkel. Is Lefichach Nikru al Shmo. Who saved the people, the Shvatim of Israel? There were no supplies, there was no food, there's no sustenance because of the great famine. It was Yosef. And Yosef, who saved their lives and sustained them, is considered their father. Now, this is a different perspective than what we had before in Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Hanina, and Rabbi Yochanan. They were talking about Gidlo, about a spiritual parent. And now Rabbi Elazar broadens it and says that you can be considered a parent if you support someone. So imagine if you adopt a yosom and you offer that yosom two things to raise them. Number one, an environment of inspiration and guidance. And number two, physical or, shall we say, financial support. In such a case, we have two different reasons why you would be considered a parent. And basically the underlying theme here of this Gemara, if you take both the first approach of spiritual parenthood and the second approach of support and financial support of Rabbi Elazar, then what you really get is the following, that when you save someone's life, whether you save them spiritually or you save them physically, you are really their parent. They owe you everything. Now we have an overall principle which we derive from the Bnei Aaron. And it says the following, Om Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmedi, Om Rav Yonasan Kala Malami Ben Chavero Torah. I think, Hanan, you were referring to this Gemara before. Malalav Akosav Kilu Yelodo. And again, very often we derive this from Avram Avinu. We'll see that later on. But here we're deriving it from Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because the pasuk says, V'ele toldos Aaron u'Moshe, Habachar Nadav v'Aviu Elazar v'Tamar. The four sons of Aaron are enumerated after the opening verse, the introductory verse that says, V'ele toldos, what does it say? Aaron u'Moshe. What does it mean, Aaron u'Moshe? I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu had children, that we know, but not these four that are listed here in the very pasuk are not the children of Moshe. So why does the Torah say Elu told us Aaron u'Moshe? Loma lecha she'Aaron yolad, although Aaron is certainly the biological father of Nadav Aviu Elaz v'Tamar, but nevertheless, Moshe teaches them Torah. Lefichach nikru al shmo, they're considered the children of both Aaron and Moshe. Now, in this case, I think we have an additional chiddush here, because Aaron is not just the physiological father of these four children, he's also the spiritual father of these four children. But the primary Rebbe here is Moshe Rabbeinu. What happens is, Chazal described that after Moshe receives the Torah, he gives it over to Aaron. Then Aaron takes his seat on the side, on the right side, and in comes Aaron's children. And Moshe Rabbeinu repeats, he reviews the Torah in the presence of both Aaron and the children of Aaron. And then we go to the next stage, and Yoshua comes in, and so forth and so on. But basically, it turns out that Aaron heard the Torah four times from Moshe Rabbeinu. But although Aaron would certainly have a spiritual impact on his children, Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who transmitted the Torah to the four children of Aaron. Hence, they are called Toldos Moshe. Now, I don't know, there's a famous shul, I think, in the Meir Shearim area, which is called Toldos Aaron, is it not?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to create another shul, and we'll call it Toldos Moshe. I don't know, maybe there is such a shul, Toldos Moshe. In any event, let's go on now with another drasha about giving birth to children and raising children. The pasuk says in Yeshayahu Hanavi, Lachein, Ko Amar Hashem, El Beis Yaakov, Asher Pada Es Avraham. This pasuk in Yeshaya is a pella. Take a look at this pasuk. The pasuk says that Yaakov Avinu was Poda Avram. He redeemed Avram. Azoy state, that's what it says. It says Asher Poda Es Avram. It's referring to Yaakov. So right away we have to ask the question, where's the source that Yaakov Pidol Yavram? And the Talmud Bavli that we're about to learn in the name of Rabbi Yehuda gives one answer. The Medrash gives a whole different answer, which I want to share with you. Let's first look at the Bavli. Omer Rabbi Yehuda Pido Mitzar Gidul Bonin. In other words, Avram Avinu had the, so to speak, hassle of raising young children. And this is based on the Pasuk. It says, I think we're going to read that Pasuk not this coming week, but the week after. It says, "V'erbeisi ezaracha kechochvei ha-shamayim." And now we have a multitude of children, and it seems that Avraham Avinu is going to have the responsibility of raising these children, and that's called Tsar Gidul Bonin. Now comes along Yaakov Avinu, and he is going to redeem his grandfather Avram from this Torah, this very heavy burden on his shoulders of Tsar Gidul Bonim. Hayu Dechsiv, the Pasuk says there in Yeshayahu, the same Pasuk, it says, Lo ata yavosh Yaakov, lo ata panov yechvaru. And what does this mean? Lo ata yavosh Yaakov me aviv, velo ata panov yechvaru me avi aviv. In other words, Yaakov doesn't have to be, so to speak, embarrassed in front of his father Yitzchak or in front of his grandfather Avram Avinu. He has no busha because he was poda them from Tsar Gidul Bonin. Well, again, in the case of Yitzchak, we're not sure exactly what this means, because Yitzchak certainly, even Avram to some extent, but certainly Yitzchak suffered all the pangs and the hassles of raising both Yaakov and Esav. But in the case of Avi Aviv, with regard to Avram Avinu, here we could say Chiltzo Mitzar Gidul Bonin. In other words, Avram Avinu had the responsibility on his shoulders, the weight of Tsar Gidul Bonim, and in fact Yaakov Avinu is going to redeem him of Tsar Gidul Bonim. Now it sounds like Lo Yevosh Yaakov Me Avram Umi Yitzchak Lefisha Pidaam Mitzar Gidul Bonim. It's in plural. And what this means is that Yaakov Avinu is going to raise the 12 Shvatim. That's his responsibility. And it could very well mean that both Avram and Yitzchak, in and of themselves, because of the divine promise, would have and were, in a sense, in some divine scheme, were meant to be the father, each one respectively, of the 12 Shvatim. Instead, who's going to have the responsibility to raise these 12 Shvatim? They will not be born to Avram nor to Yitzchak, they will be born to Yaakov. And it says here that Yaakov, that Yitzchak was Roy Lahavi Yud Bei Shvatim. Now, not only was Avram Roy Laholid Yud Bei Shvatim, but even Yitzchak was Roy Lahavi Yud Bei Shvatim. Okay, now this is the underlying principle of our Gemara, and the Medrash also says there were Uya Haisa Rivka the wife of Yitzchak is Sheyam Yamdu Bimena Yud Bei Shvatim. So in both the cases of Avram and Yitzchak, we have Roy Leholid Yud Bei Shvatim. Instead, Yaakov is going to have the responsibility. You know, it's who's going to be the father of Klal Yisrael, of the Yud Bei Shvatim? Who's going to raise the Yud Bei Shvatim? It's going to be a responsibility that rests on the shoulders of Yaakov. And Yaakov, in that sense, is Poder, both Avram and Yitzchak, relieving their, as it were, alleviating them from their responsibility to, and the hassle of raising these 12 children. The Medrash offers another interpretation, which is mind-boggling. I wanted to share it with you, of what does it mean, Yaakov asher podes Avram, v'chihechan matzinu Yaakov asher podo Avram. And the Medrash's answer is that Yaakov podes Avram b'kivshon ha'esh. And the Medrash goes on to say that when Avram was thrown into the Kivshon Eish by Nimrod, the Malachim wanted to come and cool off the fire and save Avram. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, why should I allow you to alter nature for the sake of Avram? And the Malachim respond, because Yaakov Avinu is going to be born from Avram. So if you spare Avram, then he will eventually father Yaakov. And that's Yaakov asher podoli Avram. The Pella, the amazing thing about this Medrash, is that Avram did not have his own, shall we call it, independent rights to be saved and to be spared. He was only spared because of Yaakov, who would come from him down the line. We have something similar in the case of in the case of the children of you know, Lot, in that relationship, because ultimately the Mashiach is going to come from what?
From Moab.
From Amnu Moab. Yeah, from Moab, actually, you're right. So Hashem spares Moab because of the future of David HaMelech. But here we say that Hashem spared Avram Avinu and saved him from the Kivshon Eish b'zchus Yaakov Avinu, but not in his own rights. That's a pella.
But isn't it his own rights? It's his yichus.
But again, forgetting that Yaakov, wouldn't Avram Avinu, imagine the man is willing for the sake of his belief in one God to have himself thrown into a Kivshon Eish? I mean, that's a pretty heavy thing. So why would that alone be enough to spare him? No, the Hashem says to Malachim, forget it. I'm not going to bother with this, you know, to change nature for the sake of Avram. He doesn't deserve it.
Well, that's because he's got Yishmael, and Yitzchak's got Esau, but Yaakov, he's just got.
It could be, Steve. You're right, and I'm sure you are right. But keep in mind, this is before the birth of Yishmael. So what I'm asking is the following. You can look down the line, but L'chor, you don't even have to look down the line. Right now, Basher Husham, doesn't Avram Avinu have his own merits to be spared? So the reason I ask this question is not because I want to baffle you, but because I want to share with you the answer of the Mishnah Lamelech. I don't know if you heard of the Mishnah Lamelech. His name is Rav Yaakov Roznas, and he authored, number one, a super commentary on the Rambam. This is about 3 centuries ago. But number two, he authored a book on Chazal on Breishis. That's called Parshas Drachim. I don't know if you ever heard of the Sefer. Parshas Drachim. So he says something that's absolutely mind-boggling. He says that Avram Avinu had no right to allow himself to be thrust in the Kivshon Eish. He should have bowed down to the idols or to Nimrod to save his life. And how does the Parshas Drachim have the audacity to say such a thing? He quotes a Gemara later on in Sanhedrin that the Gemara asks whether a Ben Noach is Mitzuvah al Kiddush Hashem. Now keep in mind that according to the Mishnah Lamelech, until Matan Torah at Har Sinai, the status of what we call the Jewish nation was that of Bnei Noach. Again, that has to be studied. You could probably dedicate 6 months of your life just to figure that out. What was the status of our avos before Matan Torah? Because the Gemara in Krisus derives all the laws of Geirus from Matan Torah. So until Matan Torah, there was no Geirus, and therefore our forefathers were Bnei Noach. Now the Gemara vacillates back and forth whether Ben Noach has to give up his life on any one of his 7 mitzvahs. So for example, you put a gun to John Paul Jones's head and you say, if you don't eat this Eiver Menachai, I'm going to knock your block off. And the Gemara's final conclusion is that a guy is not mitzvah on Kiddush Hashem. He has no mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. And the Rambam writes in the fifth parak of Yesod HaTorah that if you're not obligated in Kiddush Hashem, there's no voluntary Kiddush Hashem. Again, this caused a tremendous, how do you say it in English, pulmus, a controversy that lasted for all of Jewish history. But the Rambam's view, at least, is that when you're not obligated to give up your life, then you're not allowed to give up your life. The Rambam goes as far as to say that if you give up your life when you're not obligated to do so, it's suicide. And the Parshas Drachim therefore says that Avraham Avinu was guilty of suicide. Again, I wouldn't share this with you if it wasn't the Parshas Drachim. If Berzon would say this, you'd have to put up the Pashkevillas, you know what I'm saying, and announce me as an outright scoffer. But the Parshas Drachim says that a Ben Noach is not mitzuv al Kiddush Hashem. The status of Avraham Avinu was that of a Ben Noach. Even the Ramban, by the way, who grants Avraham Avinu a status as a Jew, that's only after the milah, not at the time of the Kiddushin age. So at this point, Avraham Avinu did not undergo any sort of geirus. He didn't have milah yet until the end of Parshas Lech Lecha. So what are we left with? We're left with Ben Noach, and the Gemara's final conclusion is Ben Noach is not mitzvah on Kiddush Hashem. How many mitzvahs does Ben Noach have?
Seven.
You want to add an eighth? Let's add Kiddush Hashem. Gemara says no. It's seven, and only seven, and not eight. So if that be the case, Avraham Avinu was voluntarily giving up his life al Kiddush Hashem. Is there such a thing as voluntarily giving up your life? And the Rambam says absolutely not. And therefore, says the Mishnah Lemelech, we needed Yaakov Avinu, that in effect, Avraham Avinu at that moment did not have the merits to be saved on his own. He was only spared because who would come out of him two generations later? Yaakov Avinu. And then hence the pasuk says, Yaakov Asher Pada Es Avraham. Just a mind-boggling medrash. It's not the Talmud Bavli, but you should know about this medrash. Well, what time is it? Oh, I didn't. You know, time flies when you're having fun. So, if anyone's around at 10:30, we'll have a Mirtz Hashem, an Ian Shir Masechta Sanhedrin on Daf Yud Ches. We have to finish up on Daf Yud Ches. If you weren't there yesterday, don't worry. I will review some of the basics from yesterday. You'll have all the knowledge at your disposal that you need. Everyone should have a great day, and just keep thinking about Yaakov Avinu Asher Pada Es Avraham.